Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Fuel your day with Green Farm's new high-protein cooked chicken breast fillets. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
Thanks to Chris and Kira for entertaining us as always. It's Monday the 6th of September and this is Game On. Coming up today, how the Meath machine outdid the Dubs. Player of the match Vicky Wall will join Nadine Doherty to look back on a Croke Park classic.
The Hoosier sounds in Croke Park. It's a day of history for Meath's GAA. They took the form book of the predictions and they ripped them to shreds. They have sent Dublin's five in a row All-Ireland ambitions up in smoke. They have produced an incredible performance of real quality and for the very first time in their history, they are All-Ireland senior ladies football champions, intermediate winners last December, senior champions today. One of the most incredible games we've seen at Croke Park.
It really was unbelievable. Greg Allen will bring us up to speed as Leona Maguire is out on the course again as she continues to light up the Solheim Cup.
Oh my goodness, that's as much emotion as we've seen from Leona Maguire ever. Fantastic. Well done, these two. That's a really convincing win and a big win. And up goes another European point on the board.
As Katie Taylor stays undisputed, we've another undisputed champ on the way. Jason Smith joins us on his Tokyo return with his sixth Paralympic gold medal.
But you know, you put people under pressure under 10 seconds, you know, it just makes the room for mistakes and errors. And all I can say is thankfully I was the first person across that line tonight.
Plus, we'll hear from Stephen Kenny ahead of this Serbia challenge, and Damien Lawler has more on inter-county manager exits.
Game on 2FM.
So if you want to get in touch, please do so. You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM. So I briefly mentioned that Leona Maguire is in Solheim Cup action and she has got off to a flying start. Indeed, actually, Europe have as well. They are one up in three matches and Leona is included in that with two others, all square and match six only underway. So Leona has just played her tee shot from the third, but as I said, she got off to an unbelievable start. She eagled the par five second. So it looks like she is on fire. We'll have more updates from Greg Allen on how she's getting on and how Team Europe are doing as they bid to defeat the United States. Nadine Doherty is with me in studio. Nadine, you're very welcome. We're talking about Leona Maguire here, but it has just been an absolutely super weekend for women's sport. It's hard to know even where to start. And that's such a brilliant place to be on a Monday at 6 o'clock with so many great stories, just trying to decide which one is our top story out of four or five brilliant women's ones.
Yeah, Marie, what a weekend. 6 o'clock this morning, I got up, wake up, the papers, the headlines, such a buzz. And, you know, it's just that deserved recognition. It's been a long time coming. It's great to see it's there. Long may continue. Meath, what a story. What a team. You know, last week I compared them to the Mighty Ducks, and by God, they are the Mighty Ducks. Eamon Murray's the new Gordon Bombay this week, I think. And look, they brought more than exuberance, and they definitely didn't come to Dublin only for the shopping. And I can't wait to chat to Vicky now shortly. And Leona Maguire, I suppose the highlight with her for me was her and Mel Reid ripping up the script and beating Ewing and Corda, and then following up yesterday by snatching that half a point. So incredible. And Katie McCabe, our Irish captain, we're always so proud of Katie. You know, she's over there in Arsenal mixing it with the best of the best. If you look at their squad, they've added Tobin Heath this year from the USA. Just incredible. And Katie Taylor, look, what do we say about Katie? Business as usual. But amazing, amazing.
Yeah, it really was. Just such a brilliant advertisement for women's sport. I know we've said for quite a long time that we feel like progress has been made, but it has been slow. But I think this weekend really just signified how far women's sport has came. And it's the fact as well that the interest is so widespread. You know, I tweeted a picture of the top seven most read stories on the RTE website last night before I went to bed at 10 to 12, and they were all women's sports stories. And like, I've been following RTE's website for a long time, and I don't remember ever on a Sunday night having all of the main sports stories been about women, especially in a weekend where the Republic of Ireland football team were playing and a weekend where the England footballers were playing as well. Like, there were other stories that people would generally have clicked on, but it was all women's sports stories that they were clicking on. And these are just sports fans. They're not women supporters. They are sports fans who are genuinely interested in how women's sport is doing. And all of the women that you named there deserve huge credit for that, because they delivered us just they gave us so much entertainment over the weekend. Just the level of performance that they were able to put on was just fantastic. And it's actually really good timing to make that point, because I am now joined on the line by one of these incredible women, Vicky Wall, who won player of the match for me yesterday in that All-Ireland final, joins us now. Vicky, how are things now? Has the dust settled? Has it sunk in that you're All-Ireland champions?
I think it's slowly setting in. I suppose a few of us kind of having the realizations at different points today, but yeah, it's absolutely class.
Vicky, it was some performance, and I hate starting with, like, nobody expected you to do it, but I'm sure that you did. But the whole season, every single obstacle that you overcome, I made this point on Wednesday when we were previewing the game, every challenge that was put in front of you, you just overcame it, you rose to it, you took it on, and you were able to get through it. Like, any barrier, anything that people expected, that were surprised by what happened, you were just able to always get there.
Yeah, look, I suppose for us, maybe this year, it was nice for us to have that underdog title, and I suppose for us it kind of reduced any pressure in terms like that, and people weren't expecting a lot of things from us, but inside the camp that definitely wasn't the case. We were training for every match individually and just kind of seeing what we needed to do to get the win, and I suppose for us it's definitely been a journey, but it's been unbelievable.
Vicky Cogar, just more laughing. The voice is holding up there. We're glad we got in on time. And, you know, Vicky, just to say to you all a massive congratulations and savour the next few weeks. You know, the first one's the most special, and moments you'll laugh about and talk about in the next 20 years. So enjoy it. So, look, Vicky, as Marie said, we didn't give you much of a hope. You know, I didn't. I just felt this year was a step too far. But what a performance, what a team. You know, you're just a credit to your county and each other. And I've never been as happy to have been so wrong, because what we as fans experienced in Croke Park yesterday, we haven't experienced in a long time. And, you know, Marie spoke about the game plan there, and it's something we've spoken about, your game plan, for a long time. And I'd imagine before the match, your coaches had told you what would probably happen and what could happen if you executed certain parts of it. So, you know, for example, when Dublin came back to within 2 points, I could see Monica McGurk and a few of you guys saying, you know, calm down, you know, we knew this was going to happen, stick to the plan, you were prepared. You know, at any point though, even early on, did you get that feeling and throughout that, you know, did you lift your performance when those moments were happening that the lads told you about? When they started happening, did your sense of belief grow in those moments? Because it grew for us, so did it grow for you?
Yeah, look, I suppose sport is a peculiar thing, and even like on the pitch, we've done all the what-if scenarios and doing match scenarios, and you're 5 points down 2 seconds, 2 minutes to go, not 2 seconds, what do you do? And or 2 points up 5 minutes to go, what do we do? So I suppose we were definitely prepared for those type of scenarios. But then on the biggest stage in Croke Park, I suppose you can be as prepared as you want, but it comes down to how you react in those scenarios. And I suppose I kind of said it, I think a few times now, that the fact that like we were in so many different, we've been in so many different positions over the years, and we've lost a lot of tight games in my experience anyway, that we've probably almost done a lot of losing to know how to finish our games in this stage. And I suppose for Dublin, and I suppose our belief, I think our belief was always there. And I suppose, look, like I say, I think a lot of people are delighted to have been wrong. But for us, that was something that definitely drove us on. And I suppose for us hearing the word luck and lucky being thrown around, I suppose maybe during the week, for us, we kind of maybe kept that one a bit close to our hearts, and felt that that maybe was a bit of an injustice to us and the hard work that we put in. So I suppose, the belief definitely did grow in those type of situations, and everyone stood up in the times they needed to. You know, Monica came in clutch when she needed to, and then you look at the likes of Avian Cleary, Emma Troy, anyone that needed to stand up at a particular moment did, and I think that's what really stood to us yesterday.
Yeah, absolutely. I have so many of you circled on the programme, but just in your second half, you know, you only scored 3 points, but for me, you had so much possession, and just on your own game, Vicky, I felt that every time you carried the ball or drew a foul or you made that 50, 60 yards, it was like a score. And you just didn't seem to tire. You know, at any point, did the legs start feeling tired?
My legs was gone from that first tackle after the throw. My right calf was fairly sore after that one. But it would have taken a lot to get, I think, any one of us off the pitch yesterday. So, yeah, look, there definitely was tired legs. But I suppose we've done so much work and so much kind of running and everything like that, we knew we had it in us, you know. We knew that it wasn't going to be a case of how fit we were. Like, and I think that's something that we acknowledged in previous years, that like we didn't want that to be a factor that couldn't like prohibit us from winning a game. We never wanted it to be a situation of our fitness let us down on the day, you know, that kind of way. We didn't want to put that in as a variable. Like, we talk about the controllables and uncontrollables, and that's something as a team we can control. So I suppose all across the pitch and all across the entire panel of 37, 40 girls, like, it's just the fitness and something like that was something we put a huge emphasis on.
And Vicky, that fitness that you mentioned, and it's such a big part of Gaelic football now, is that something that you felt you really built on this year, or is it something that you've been working on over the last few years and you just got it really right this year?
Yeah, I think it's something that has been building over the last few years. I don't think it's happened overnight, and I think it's kind of been accumulation of different things.
Can you hear me, Vicky?
Yep.
Oh, you're still there. Just on yourself as well, and people are so curious about the whole Meath setup because the fact that you came up from intermediate and you did have so many tough years, but you're somebody, and one of the few as well, that has been there since those really tough times. Even though you're still only 23, you've had 7 seasons now with Meath. What were those days like when things weren't going well?
Yeah, I think it's easy kind of to kind of disassociate and maybe forget them a little bit when we're doing so well, but it's definitely kind of, when you reflect on it, like, then Jesus, they were horrendous days. Like, they really, really, really were. It was week in, week out, like, traveling the country and just losing game in, game out. And I think at the time you kind of like to say it doesn't affect the momentum and the Meath football, but it definitely did. And I kind of, I've said it before, that I was definitely against going down to intermediate when the idea came up when I was involved in the panel. Now, that was a vote from a 16, 17-year-old that was the first year up on the panel and obviously wanted to stay in a senior level. So I suppose maybe I didn't have a huge understanding of it then. But in hindsight, it was the best thing we've ever done, going back down to intermediate, building confidence up as a group and kind of getting people back together, getting girls that maybe interest dropped off in previous years for various different reasons. And I suppose maybe getting that panel back together and rebuilding from there, it's the best thing we've ever done as a county.
And I think as well, Vicky, when you throw in the people as well that came along, and Eamon Murray is someone that has hit the headlines over the last week or so, just probably more so because he's been so cool, calm and collected in the run-up to the game. But having people like Eamon involved, how crucial has that been? And like, just what's his role been? Because it's really hard to tell because he's just so calm all the time.
It's funny, I cool, calm and collected is definitely not words I'd use to describe Eamon Murray ever in my life. But look, I suppose to all of us, he is like a second dad. He is just the buzz of the camp. Like, he's just the best crack. And if you're having a terrible day and you go to train, there's no better man to put a smile on your face and have the crack and just rip it into you. And he's just an unbelievable human being. And I suppose for Eamon this year, I suppose football was an outlet and an escape, I suppose, for Eamon, his daughter having gone through cancer and stuff in the last few years. And really tough time for their family. And I suppose for Eamon, the rewards that he's gotten the last few years, and I suppose the recognition that he's really, really deserved for, he's been involved in Meath football for the last 20 years, but I suppose he's kind of now reaching those headlines and getting recognition, and he's a man that I can't speak highly enough of.
Yeah, he just brings such a presence. And what I always liked about Eamon and watching him last while, he seems to have such humility, and, you know, he knows his strengths and he knows where the strengths of the rest of the management team lie. And, you know, it's great for Eamon. I remember playing with Eamon actually in Pats. She was the goalkeeper and a lovely, lovely girl. So we wish her the best. And just finally, Vicky, before you go, when does the club championship start now in Meath? You're back to business soon, I'd say.
We're back Sunday week, so I suppose we'll enjoy this week now anyway with no thoughts of club, but we'll probably all be back training now this weekend with our clubs and focusing on that. But it's something that I'm really looking forward to, and I think a lot of the girls are as well. I suppose personally, I haven't been with clubs since probably last September, October. Our county has probably been our club this year, but it's definitely not a complaint either. But yeah, looking forward to getting back to that, but it's probably at the back of the mind at the moment, but looking forward to it at the same time.
And Vicky, one thing that you will have done, whether you like it or not, is you will have reignited a spark in a lot of counties around the country who will have seen the template that you followed over the last few years and will think that they can do what you have done as well. And it's brilliant to see different counties win. But if you have advice for anyone that wants to follow in Meath's football, Meath's footsteps, what would it be?
Yeah, I suppose, I don't know if it's a case of simple advice, but even like, I just look at the likes of Wexford, and I know the results didn't go their way yesterday, But like, we've had tremendous battles with them throughout the years, and even they got relegated from Division 2 this year, and then they turn around and come back and make an intermediate final. I think there's a lot of these kind of stories in ladies football, and I think that the fact that there is three grades and you have a chance to build yourself up, and just, I just think it's just so important just to keep a team together, and that would be my main thing. I just think as long as you can keep a group together and progress through things, as tough as the times may be, if you can keep people together, I think that's half the battle.
Yeah, and Vicky definitely inspired people as well, and not just senior players, but all the girls and the young people, not only in Meath, but all around the country, because so many people watched that game yesterday. I just got the email from TG Carr, and it was 600,000 people, which is absolutely phenomenal, really.
Yeah, look, that's outrageous. And I suppose for TG Carr, like, they've done an unbelievable amount of work for the ladies' game, and the amount of promotion they do for not even just ladies' football, but just Irish sport in general, I think is just unbelievable. And I suppose I've had a chance to work with them myself, and they're unbelievable. But as well, like, to see that, like, that many people tuning in, and even for us, seeing a lot of the girls in our own Meath key pack jerseys, like our jerseys, is just huge for us. It's something that over the last 2 years we've definitely seen a bit of a change in, so it's just class.
Okay, well, Vicky, we'll let you get back to the celebrations, because they sound like they're going on behind you, and they're really it's been a great soundtrack, actually, I have to say. But look, it's well deserved. You gave everybody such a lift, not just yesterday, but all through the championship. We really loved following your progress, your story, your journey, and we wish you all the best in the future. Vicky, thanks so much.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Game on 2FM. With Green Firm. Get back on track after summer with Green Firm's high-protein cooked chicken breast fillet range. Available in selected stores nationwide.
Welcome back. So Leona Maguire's incredible start is continuing. Europe are leading in four matches to the USA's one, and Leona Maguire has birdied four and is now two up against Jennifer Kupcho. So unbelievable from her, and we'll be keeping an eye on that throughout the show. Nadine Doherty is with me. Nadine, we're going to look back on that phenomenal Gaelic football match that happened yesterday. Meath dethroning the Dubs in a pretty big shock, even though, look, they were brilliant all year and we kept writing them off in many ways or not expecting them to win, but they really were. But when you look at Dublin's performance, Nadine, it probably was a little bit below par. I don't think they were ready really for the intensity that Meath brought.
No, Marie, and just to say, I suppose, before we get into the performance, you know, they were so gracious in defeat, and what champions they've been. You know, I watched them after, they shook hands with every Meath player, they consoled each other, they thanked their supporters, and they've just been brilliant champions, and what they've done for our sport has been amazing. You know, they always aim to raise the standards and improve the game, and, you know, ironically, they might have been the only architects of their downfall, you know, because they would have inspired me. But whatever players do step away, I think we all in LGFA owe them a huge thank you. But yeah, you know, their performance, they just had no answer at any point of the game, you know, no answer to Meath's intensity or game plan. It was nearly similar to the Kerry Tyrone match last week. I was watching it and I was thinking, have Dublin not watched Meath here? You know, even on the kickouts were massive. They didn't push up, they didn't mark one and one. They kind of went in the zonal when Meads were clearly going short. And I think as well, just the pace of the game, they couldn't keep up with Meads. Their injuries this year, I feel, probably caught up with them. You know, Carla Rowe, Niamh Collins, Sinead Goldrick, Siobhan McGrath, Niamh McAvoy, they've all struggled this year and they were off the pace. And I suppose the big one, they had no threat going forward, and it was because of Meath's defensive system. Meath were so quick getting back, and Dublin just weren't fast enough in that transition.
And Vicky did mention the fitness. They clearly had a plan for that. They knew that it was something that's going to be really important. I suppose from watching Dublin over the last few years, we can see how important the fitness is to them and how crucial it's been for them to get over the line in so many of those finals. But that game plan, you know, I don't know why Dublin weren't ready for it, because Meath have it down to a T. They implemented it so often. They're so well drilled in it. They know exactly what they're doing. And they just stick to it. They don't panic. They know that they have a process. We saw in Cork, they were against Cork, they were down 6 or 7 points and they never panicked. They were able to eventually claw back and to get those two crucial goals and go on and win in the end. But there was a bit of naivety from Dublin, really.
Yeah, and surprisingly so, because, you know, we spoke about Mick and his coaching and his methods, and he did allude, I suppose, to the fact, you know, yesterday and today in interviews that they were so unfamiliar with Meath, and they haven't played Meath. And when they've been playing the likes of Donegal, the Armaghs, the Galways, the Mayos, you do get used to their game plan, and you get used to it better when you're playing against them. So having not played Meath, I suppose they looked at tapes, they studied them, but they completely underestimated that pace. But in fairness to Meath, they went up another level from the Cork game. I mean, their fitness levels went up another level. They were probably getting back to that defensive system 2-3 seconds faster than they had been against Cork. And it was just incredible to watch. And I honestly, after 10 minutes I was watching, I was like, I can't see where Dublin are going to change this. And they tried, you know, Hannah Turrell, in fairness, had a great game. She kicked over points. But in general, you just couldn't see where a goal was ever going to come from. And there was one point in the second half, I couldn't see where a Dublin point was even going to come from. So I don't think
it felt, Nadine, that when Meath needed to get those crucial points, when maybe there was a little bit of pressure on and you could see a few gaps, or there was an odd turnover or two, Meath were able to step up, get the ball to the right player who was able to pop it over the bar, and kept getting those insurance points that they needed.
Yeah, totally. And as I said to Vicky there earlier, even her ball carrying, that was a score for Meath.
Yeah.
Meath keeping possession for 2-3 minutes at a time, that was a score. But the difference was they got Emma Troy in those positions a few times on the right hand side, on her right foot from 21 yards out. Like, that's a really difficult skill to execute. Niamh O'Sullivan either side, they were just laser sharp with their finishing. And Dublin, I think Dublin had 7 or 8 wides, and that was the difference. Mm-hmm. You know, well, one of the differences. But
Nadine,
know,
as well, like, Meath's big players stepped up. Yep. Actually, all of their players stepped
100%.
Up. But they were able to nullify those key Dublin players, the ones that we were isolating earlier in the week, thinking there's no way they're going to be able to shut down such an array of talented players. But they were.
Yeah, oh, they did. The people we spoke about from Dublin, and myself and Denise, I remember asking Denise the question, if the experienced Dublin players don't perform, they're more in danger of losing than if their newer players don't perform. And that's what happened. And it was because of Meath. They absolutely nullified them. And with that, you know, I'm looking here at my programme, Aoife Leahy, Aoife Cleary, Shauna Ennis. Oh my God, what a performance, and what a speech as well after. Sorry, I wanted to say that earlier. They just took it to Dublin. Carla Rowe was out in her feet. Sinead Goldrick was out in her feet. You know, I honestly can't remember any of those Dublin experienced players in the last 5 years looking as tired. They were shouting at the ref. I just didn't see it and didn't expect it. And it was because of Meath. It was because of their performance, their intensity, their skill levels, like their confidence on the ball, Marie. They were doing exactly what we expected Dublin to do. You know, Meath had no problem kicking the ball 20 metres across their goal. They had no problem offloading a little hand pass here and there, whereas Dublin struggled to do that. And McBowen spoke about that as well. He said they really struggled with those crucial offloads. And it wasn't down to Dublin's lack of ability. It was Meath's pressure. They just didn't give them a second, didn't give them an inch.
I loved the post-match interview with Eamon as well, where he spoke about the importance of having fun, to not get too caught up in what football is about and to focus on going out and enjoying it. And that actually came across, you know, and I think Vicky mentioned it there as well, just that football is an outlet for people. It was an outlet for Eamon when times were tough with his daughter. And you could see that they were able to go out, perform in the moment, enjoy it, get the job done. They seem to have this great presence of mind and, you know, just maybe understanding of reality as well. They just weren't that bothered by anything.
I know, no, they're wise beyond their years on the pitch and I'd imagine off the pitch. And, you know, there are a few key players in there, girls who've been around for a long time, like Monica McGurk, Maria Shocknessy, you know, those girls who I would imagine are also a common presence off the pitch. But nothing fazed them, Maria's right. Mm-hmm. Like, absolutely nothing fazed them, as I spoke about there earlier. The goal, or the, when Dublin were within 2 points, I could see Monica McGurk saying, girls, relax. Like, we knew this was going to happen. They were going to have their purple patch. We will get over it, and we're building it, and nothing fazed them, you know?
Yeah, it was so impressive. Right, we are going to move on a little bit because there was some breaking news today that Jack O'Connor has stepped down from his role as Kildare senior football manager. Damien Lawler joins us now. Damien, I think the understanding was that he was going to stay on for another year, but everything has changed.
Yeah, Marie, 2 years of a 3-year term served. Jack has informed the Kildare players that he will be staying on for a third year. And I think they were in the process of formalising the backroom team for 2022. I think, you know, rumours were never fully put to bed about Jack's maybe difficulties with the travel involved, and it's an eight and a half hour round trip from his home in Kerry up to Newbridge as well. So those rumours were there even before the Leinster final, to be honest with you. Not rumours, just general talk. But then he put it to bed by telling the players he'd be around for another year. And then we had comments last week in the podcast with the Irish Examiner that, you know, asked about maybe the possibility of one day again assuming the Kerry job. He kind of said, if you're offered a Man United job, you know, who would turn it down? So that certainly kind of put a bit of uncertainty back in it again. And then, you know, an official statement released at 10 o'clock would have got word maybe before that it was going to happen. And there was two statements coming out, one from Jack, one from the Kildare County Board. And that just confirmed the news, 2 out of the 3-year term served and tenure over.
So, Damien, when I listened to that interview that he gave when he spoke about, you know, that Manchester United thing,
yeah,
I did raise my eyebrows a little bit. And, you know, you're a Kildare footballer and you think that you at some stage will be contesting All-Irelands against Kerry. You would like to think that you're not that far away. It does seem a bit of a strange thing to say for somebody when they're in that job.
Yeah, I definitely take that. And possibly would have been maybe an option maybe to deflect that question, because Jack would have expected that question to be asked of him. So it can't have come as any great shock, in my opinion. Mm. And I think a lot of managers would have kicked the touch on that one and maybe just not answered it, or answered it in a roundabout sort of way, saying, I'm in a job, the Kerry manager is currently in a job, nothing to see here kind of a thing. But look, Jack,
I just mean, if I was a player, Damien, I would have been a little bit peeved, I think, that the question was answered like that. But
yeah. I mean, and you'd be rightly justified in doing so. And I think, you know, a week later then anyway, the tenure is over. So whatever's happened since then, you know, added to the fact that travelling difficulties were massive. Yeah, probably not the nicest way to end it, to be honest with you.
But Damien, coincidence then, is it that the Kerry job, well, look, it hasn't came up, but there is a lot of speculation that it could come up.
There certainly is, yeah, and that's been there right since Kerry were beaten by Tyrone in the semi-final, and the manner of maybe the Kerry forward play and taking the ball into contact and getting dispossessed. So, yeah, I think you could put 2 and 2 together and get 4 pretty easily, but I would imagine at this stage, I'd say it's probably far from decided what's happening down there yet. I would say there's going to be an inquest pretty soon, a formal one. I say the unofficial one has already started. But I think, look, Jack O'Connor would always want the Kerry job at any given period in time. It's certainly after making it interesting down there. But I think there is a feeling, too, that Peter Keane should or could get one more year. So that'll be interesting to watch out for, because certainly the 3 years that Peter Keane has had, 2 of those have been interrupted by COVID. This year was a shambles for him, in fairness. They got no test in Munster. Tipperary came the closest by 10 points. That was the closest they got in Munster. And then they had the extended prolonged break due to COVID-19 before the Tyrone game, and they came in undercooked. So it hasn't gone well for whatever reason that is, but he might just get another year out of it. And if he doesn't, Jack will be right there among those favourites to get the job. I would say at the moment, there are not a grade A list of candidates there to replace Peter Keane, with the exception of Jack. So God knows how that argument will go yet.
What about in Kildare then? Are there any grade A targets in Kildare, Damien?
Yeah, Marie, to be honest with you, Davy Burke would be an obvious choice straight away. And I think the other two choices, the other two contenders are automatically Tom Cribben and Glenn Ryan. And I think you've got a mix of all kind of variables in coaching and managerial abilities with the three of those. Davy Burke managed Kildare to an All-Ireland Under-20 title. He did wonders with Wicklow, in my opinion, beating Cavan this year. Took over the club team in Newbridge, brought them to a league title and a county title, and is highly, highly rated, Marie. Glenn Ryan has probably felt that he could have got or should have got the Kildare job by now. He'd have a strong loyalty to the 1998 backroom, the guys he played with in the 98 team. They could form a backroom there. And Tom Cribben's highly rated. He's a highly rated guy, full stop. Plenty of managerial experience with Offaly and Westmeath. Played a key role in the backroom team this year. Tom would get what the whole thing is about. So I'd say one of those three will be the obvious successor, Marie, and there'd be a massive, massive push locally, I'd say, for Davy Burke, maybe because of his age profile and he's hunger. his hunger for immediate success, you know.
Now, well, I have you, Damien. Any movement on the Tipperary hurling manager job?
Well, I suppose from a neutral point of view, which I'm not, just looking at it statistically, Marie, and Liam Cahill is in Waterford, Darry Egan is in Wexford, Darren Gleeson is in Antrim, Mikey Beavins is coaching in Waterford, Dara Duggan was the Waterford minor manager up to last year, Johnny Enright is coaching the Meath senior hurlers, and Richie Flannery is coaching the Limerick under 20 hurlers. They're all Tipperary people. So you've got to wonder why they're not back in the Tipperary system, particularly at a point in time where there is no obvious successor to Liam Sheedy, now that Liam Cahill has decided to stick with Waterford. But the two leading contenders, as we speak here tonight, are Brendan Cummins and Willie Maher. Brendan Cummins had past experience with Laois and Kerry in the backroom team, a five-time All-Star as well, obviously. Willie Maher has led Tipperary to Munster and All-Ireland minor titles. He's been a selector on under-21 Munster and All-Ireland winning teams. He's managed Coola to two Dublin championships. He's involved with Bennisbridge at the moment. They beat Ballyhale Shamrocks at the weekend. He's there as a selector. So it's between those two, I'm led to believe. And I think they've both met with the county board. Brendan Cummins was initially supposed to be interested in the under-20 job, I believe, but that's progressed now, and he's in the frame for the senior job too. But I think that's really as far as it's got, Marie. And I think the county is still probably reeling from Liam Cahill staying with Waterford, if I'm being honest about it.
OK, well, hopefully I'll talk to you later in the week, Damien, because you know I love a good manager merry-go-round. Thank you so much for all of that information. Now, I am delighted to say that we are now joined on the line by Jason Smith, six-time Paralympic gold medalist. Jason, we spoke to you before you went out, and I think it felt like it was never in doubt, really. But I think maybe when it came to the final, it was probably a pretty sweet one because it was a little bit tougher than you were used to.
Yeah, for sure. For anybody obviously who'd seen the race, it came down to a hundredth of a second. So I can't remember what point I was chatting to you before, but I was aware of this. This was the standard, and some of the athletes had improved, and obviously I had a few injury issues this last year, which I kept on the low down, but I know I've been there enough and done it enough to know that when the time comes that I can execute my race, and thankfully that's just about what happened.
I was listening to your interview afterwards with Darren Frehill, and you mentioned those injuries, and I've actually spoken to you twice, I think, in the run up to the games, and you never mentioned them. Like, you were so confident, you were so positive, like you'd never have been able to tell that maybe there was a few little things going on in the background.
And I mean, that's something, you know, I try to do, as in I'm not trying to throw out excuses, reasons why things don't go or might not go well. I'm also not interested in giving my competitors any edge that they think that I'm not where I need to be. So for me, it's, you know, about trying to, as I said, keep everything quiet, try to get my preparation right, and use that to my advantage, because at the end of the day, going into the games, I'm there to be beaten. I'm the favourite, and it's also using that, as I say there, as an advantage, that whenever you step on the track, that sometimes people are scared of you.
It was so close, Jason. Did you know, when it was over, did you know that you had won, or were you a bit apprehensive looking around? Were you confident that you'd got the job done straight off?
It was a bit of a strange one. Obviously, it was so close, so you can never be 100% sure. I kind of thought that I had just been slightly ahead of him. But at the same time, I thought I'd seen him kind of celebrating a little bit just as he crossed the line. So that was a wee bit, did I actually cross the line ahead of him? Then I can't see the screens in the stands. So,
of course, yeah.
I didn't actually know. So I think anybody watching knew I had won before I did. And then it wasn't then I went over to one of the staff, the Irish staff, and I actually had to ask him, was it me that crossed the line first? So there was a complete delay. I don't know, it could have been 30 seconds, maybe a minute max, between me crossing the line and me being told that I had won. So it was definitely a bit of a strange one.
Yeah, a different experience for you, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. I think that, and as mentioned, you know, just it was a sweeter win because of, as I say, the challenges I faced over the last year. You know, if the competition had been a number of weeks earlier, it was probably likely to be a different result. You know, timing was absolutely spot on where I needed to be and getting it right at the right time. So just a combination of lots of challenges, new athletes running faster, and me, as everybody thought it was for me to win, but actually on paper I was not the quickest going into it. So to all come together in that moment when it had to, under 10 seconds of a race, just made it so much sweeter.
So what does that mean for you, Jason? Like, you really enjoyed it. Like, it was sweeter. You'd had those few bumps beforehand, but you had this unbelievable race and the tension, and you got it done. And you know as well now that there's athletes coming up that are running quicker, that are trying to chase you down. Does it make you want it even more? Does it make you want to keep going and going? Or at some stage you go, well, maybe I should just leave it here now?
Like, there's no question that's the balance.
Isn't it?
Like, no sports person wants to just dwindle away. You know, when you look at timing, people often want to get out on the highs or on the top. And a lot of times sports people tend to keep going too long because we continue to think that we will be better and better. And eventually that doesn't happen. So there definitely is a balance of that. But I know for where I am at in performance terms and the year I've had that there is more to come. And I've never been somebody who runs away from the challenge. I think that's the exciting thing now, is the challenge is you have to get things right. You have no room for error. And I mean, that's what it's about and what sport's about. And, you know, for me, motivation hasn't been an issue of mine, and I've said for years, you know, even though there's other times at games I've won by a number of meters, I've always been preparing for when that day those gaps close, because it's always going to happen. And thankfully, you know, when the day has come a week or two ago, and things could change going forward, that I was in a position to be able to do something about it.
Yeah, Jason, and it's so obvious in all your interviews and anything that I'd read about you, your preparation is key. And you've also identified you do a lot of self-coaching. But, you know, talking there about maybe, you know, when you do walk away, like, you had a season's best PB of 10:53. I'm sure there's massive motivation in you now to go and do that again next year.
Yeah, there is. You know, I think as any older athlete, it's the challenge is physical, and I mean, I don't find a mental challenge, otherwise I wouldn't be here after 17 years. It becomes a physical challenge, and how do you keep your body healthy and consistent? And that's not the same answer as it was 5 and 10 years ago. So it's now trying to be smart about how you approach things. But I do believe I can, the signs are there this year that I could have run quicker if I was still competing in a month's time. The reality is I probably ran quicker than what I did a few weeks ago. So I think that's a great base to be on when I consider the future. And obviously the next games now is only 3 years away, which just feels that little bit closer and a little bit easier to get to.
It really does, doesn't it? Like, it'll be very hard for anyone that was even toying with the idea of deciding to give it up, knowing that this is just literally coming around the corner. You must have a very patient family though, Jason. I couldn't believe it when I heard you say that you hadn't seen them since July 10th.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the things that, you know, well, it's one of the many things that people don't see. I mean, you see a 10-second race and you see cross line first and fabulous and it looks wonderful. But the sacrifices that go on behind the scenes to get there, you know, and in this instance, we're talking about a huge sacrifice from a family perspective and especially from a wife. I mean, she's left at home with two young kids. She's from the States. My family don't, you know, live in a couple of hours away. So it's not as if we have a huge support network around. And there's no way I could do what I do without her support. And I'm very fortunate that she is supportive, because, you know, as I say, there's a huge amount that goes on to get me in the position and where I need to be to perform at that level.
Well, you don't look like you are slowing down anytime soon. Anyway, Jason Smith, thank you so much for joining us. As you said, the support is so important, and Allianz Ireland have been a proud sponsor of Paralympics Ireland since 2010 and have partnered with Jason for those 6 years.
FM. Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Healthy dinners made easy with Green Farm's high protein cooked chicken breast fillets range, available in selected stores nationwide.
Welcome back to Game On with me, Marie Crowe. I'm in the company of former Donegal Gaelic footballer Nadine Doherty. The Solheim Cup is continuing and Leona Maguire is continuing to impress. She is now 3 up in her singles match. Europe are up in 4 matches, the USA in 2, and 3 other matches are level as things stand. The penultimate match has just teed off between Charlie Hull and the USA's Jessica Korda, and we're going to have updates from Greg Allen a little bit later on. We're turning our attention to football now. Reports today suggested that Stephen Kenny's job as Republic of Ireland may be under a little bit of immediate pressure. But today he faced the media and he came out fighting.
Our performances overall in this campaign have been, bar the Luxembourg game, which we were very disappointed with, our performance have been good overall. I think with Serbia and Portugal in the group, and the Spain been ripped out of the team, and we haven't qualified for the World Cup since 2002, did anyone think that we were favourites to qualify, or that we should qualify? You know, we certainly have a plan in place, and that, like, I've taken the decision, right or wrong, that we would build a squad to be a really, really competitive team to qualify for Germany 2024. Okay, now we did not try and win the games. We went very close to winning Serbia and winning against Portugal. Okay, away from home. We scored first goal in both games. We're brilliant football in both games. So I am, you know, I think I've taken that decision, and collectively we did. And that's why, you know, I think, you know, last week against Azerbaijan was a good occasion. The supporters were brilliant. We started brilliantly. Couldn't get that goal. They've scored a goal in 25 yards. They defended deep. We threw the kitchen sink at them, you know, so many attempts on goal, and we missed the target. Our finishing could have been better. We have only ourselves to blame in that regard. But I think there's real progress overall, to be honest, and that's the way I see it, and that's why my staff see it, and all the coaches see it, and there's a lot of people behind that. There's a lot of people who aren't, who just see, well, you're in a results, but that's not your job to develop the game here. That's not your job. Your job is just to win the next match. That's your job. And you know, that kind of nearsightedness doesn't create anything. Doesn't create anything. You might beat teams you shouldn't beat, but you'll never beat the teams that you can strive to beat. So you're trying to build something that can actually be tangible over a period of time, and that can be successful. And that's the way I see it.
Now, Stephen Kenny speaking there a little bit earlier on, he faced the media after reports were suggesting that he could be under a little bit of pressure ahead of that Serbia game. Alan Cawley is with us now. Alan, look, the debate is ongoing. It's highs and lows when it comes to the Republic of Ireland football team, but that has been the case long before Stephen Kenny took over, and it'll probably be the case long after he leaves. But just from where we are now, Alan, how much pressure do you think he's under?
Yeah, from the reports I was reading today, Marie, it seems like he is under a little bit, but I hope that's not the case at all, because I think that's a problem in the modern world that we live in. Everything's reactionary, and after the game on Wednesday, there was so much hope and optimism, and we obviously played great in Portugal, and even the general consensus out there amongst all fans and all football people or anyone who watched the game felt as though this is really good, and there's a lot of young lads starting off in their career, and there's a lot of hope and positivity and stuff we can build on. 3 days later, you draw against Azerbaijan and everybody's calling for Stephen's head and it's not working and this, that and the other. So that's a major problem in itself, Marie. Like, this was always going to play out like this campaign. There was always going to be highs, lows. You're dealing with young players starting off, as I say, in their career. There's going to be inconsistencies in their performances. And we always had to get behind this. That's not to say Stephen was getting a free pass, or that's not to say a question shouldn't be asked. I'd be critical of a couple of things he did the other night in the game, hence the one where he didn't play Jamie McGrath after Jamie playing so well. So there are questions absolutely can be asked, and it, by no means is he getting a free pass. But if we're going to get behind this project and what he's trying to do in terms of where he's starting from as well, and a starting point and trying to integrate new players and young players and change a bit of a culture and a philosophy and how we play as well, we have to just suck up this kind of stuff as well at times and just look at the bigger picture rather than reacting off every little incident that happens with Stephen.
Well, he said today that the FAI board have backed him. Now, we don't know how long for. His contract is up next summer. But today in his press conference, he did start talking about the 2024 European Championships and trying to build an Irish team that will be peaking for them. Look, Alan, we're going to go through all of this tomorrow. You are with me ahead of that Serbia game in the Aviva Stadium. So we will discuss it further. But now we're going to take a very, very quick break. And then Greg Allen is with us.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Fuel your day with Green Farm's high protein cooked chicken breast fillets. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
Welcome back to Game On. Now, I am delighted to be in the company of Greg Allen, who has been very closely watching all of the action at the Solheim Cup. Greg, how are things now?
I wish I was closer. I wish I was there. this is as good as a Ryder Cup. And so too is the last one. And so too have many Solheim Cups. It utterly, in this part of the world, I think, took over from the Tour Championship in terms of people's interest. Not that the Tour Championship is a bad tournament, it's just not a good tournament as it used to be, because the Tour Championship, top 30 players in the world are playing with a handicap system effectively, because the leader through the first whole segment of qualification for the FedEx Cup was on 10 under par, Patrick Cantlay, and he started on 10 under par against the rest of the field and he ended up winning. So that was perhaps to the advantage of the Solheim Cup, because it's been riveting all weekend, and nobody more riveting than Leona Maguire, who has made an immense impact, not just on the Solheim Cup, but in general, she's made an immense impact as a player. She doesn't perhaps have the personality that's as outgoing as other players. And because of that, she hasn't perhaps got the star billing for what she's done this year. But what she's done this year is finished second twice, top 10 six times in 15 appearances on the LPGA Tour. This is her effectively her debut season, rookie season. And here she is in the Solheim Cup, 3.5 points out of four. And she's three up after six on Jennifer Kupcho, who is the other player during Leona's amateur career who is disputing the world number one spot with her most of the time. I think Kupcho was for about 7 months world number one, and Leona Maguire was world number one for 2.5 years of that period. So this is an immensely interesting clash of two great rivals at professional level, because Kupcho has made greater strides up the world rankings earlier on in the in her pro career, and Maguire has made steady progress, and now we're seeing much more than steady progress. She's three up after six holes, and nobody is higher up in a match in any of the matches on the course, and there are nine matches on the course right now, than Leona Maguire, three up in the third match out on Jennifer Kupcho. The picture for Europe is very, very good. They lead 9-7 after the first 2 days of play, and that in itself is quite a surprise, because this American team, if you put their world rankings together, is better than the European team in terms of world rankings. So Europe taking the 9-7 lead, powered to a certain degree by Leona Maguire's brilliance, are now really in a position to win the Solheim Cup, retain the Solheim Cup, because at the moment they are up in four of the first five matches out on the golf course. Anna Nordqvist is one up through seven on Lexi Thompson. Leona is three up on Kupcho after six holes. Georgia Hall is one up on Nelly Korda, the world number one. Georgia Hall is one up on her after five holes. Céline Boutier one up on Mina Harrigay through five holes as well. So there in the first five matches on the course, the blue of Europe is dominating. And with the matches that are all square, three matches are all square at the moment, those points alone would take Europe to victory even before the last three matches go out on the golf course, if the scoreboard remains as it is. But of course, anybody who's familiar with watching Ryder Cup or Solheim Cup knows that drama can follow and things can change. And I think it's a riveting evening ahead. And wouldn't it be great if Leona Maguire wins against Jennifer Kupcho and becomes the most successful European amateur or European rookie in Solheim Cup history?
It really would. It would top off an absolutely brilliant weekend of sport. Greg Allen, as always, thank you so much for coming in. We will be back tomorrow at 6 with another really busy show.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Fuel your day with Green Farm's high protein cooked chicken breast fillets. 100% natural and packed with flavour.